Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:12 p.m., and that is Central Time. Today is September 8th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with De La Rue. The share was up in a dynamic manner today. There's obviously a reason for that, and the passing of Queen Elizabeth II is probably the causal factor. Her passing leaves an enormous chasm in the public consciousness of the UK. She was an incredibly inspiring person, and the steadfast nature in which she, at the beginning of her reign, said what she wanted to do, did it, kept on doing it, and then kept on doing it, means that anyone who comes after her will be held to that benchmark. And that is going to be exceptionally difficult. And I think that for Prince Charles, now King Charles, stepping into those shoes is going to be an exceptionally difficult thing to do, and it's going to probably take him some time to fill into that role. But the one thing we know for certain is that now the face on all of the UK coinage and notes and stamps will have to change. And that also means that De La Rue is going to get some business. Now, of course, we can also see another trend if we look at this over the longer term, and it is in the demise of paper currency. So De La Rue's fortunes really started to ebb in about 2013. And of course, people are using a lot less cash. And when you think about the fact that De La Rue supplies currency to a large number of countries, well, then there are a lot fewer people using cash, and we're much more encouraged now to use digital means of paying for just about everything. Particularly in the USA, we're rewarded for using credit cards, and in the UK, then it's the ease of the tap to pay system. But one thing is for certain, there's a clear incentive by central banks and governments to encourage people to use digital means of payment because it's easier to tax, easier to track, and gives much greater intelligence about how money moves around the system. Well, I think this is also particularly relevant when we look at the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. And that's been coming down, but it's going to accelerate. They're going to be knocking off $95 billion of value from this index every month from now on. So let's just think that between the middle of 2018 and the middle of 2019, well, I guess really the first quarter or the beginning of 2018 and the middle of 2019, they took $750 billion out of circulation. And starting now, they're going to take $95 billion a month. So that's almost three times faster. And obviously, that's going to have an effect. Now, it's not going to be quite the same this time around because we have a standing repo facility. So that means that, and the point that I've made continually for the last 2 years is that a standing repo facility in practice means there is an unlimited liability on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. So there's one way to think about it is that by ensuring that ample liquidity will be made available, then a crisis won't erupt in order to siphon that money out. But then we should be also thinking about, well, if unlimited quantities of liquidity can be made available, and we're seeing liquidity drained out of the system and interest rates are rising. Well, it does suggest that a problem is going to arise somewhere. Now, what I find interesting is that if we look at the relative performance of the largest companies in the world by market cap relative to the total market, they're still around 21%. And the index was in positive territory in here today. All of these companies are listed on the Nasdaq, and the Nasdaq followed through on yesterday's upward move. So wasn't up in as dynamic a manner, but we did get a little follow through. So this is a low of at least short-term significance. But with tighter monetary conditions, then that's going to limit how far the price can rally. But we also saw that there was some more bullish action in copper today. And the price, which has been really very volatile this year, was up in a pretty dynamic manner. So this is looking like additional demand driven move, and it's potentially now a higher reaction low. So I'm obviously going to have my bearish view tested here, but we can, I think, lay some of this bullishness at the feet of the electric vehicle sector. So General Motors came out with a rather impressive statement today that they're going to be selling their SUV, the Equinox SUV, for $30,000 for the base model starting next year. And the average SUV or electric SUV on the market right now is about 47,500, and to get anywhere close to 30,000, most of those smaller car are really small cars like the Volt and the Cruise. So this is a really significant claim, and if they do in fact get to 30,000, then that's going to be compatible or competitive with a Honda Civic, and therefore it's likely to be a success story. But of course, they would have to sell lots of them, and on top of selling lots of them, try and contain the price. So how do you contain the price? Well, obviously, one would be massive scale, so that you can reduce the cost of each individual unit. Alternatively, you've got to control for the cost of all of the individual components. So obviously copper is going to be a big factor in that. When we look at the commodities, well, I think we're well the sensitivity of demand for vehicles is very clearly matched with the oil price. So maybe now we're going to substitute reliance or the sensitivity to oil with sensitivity to copper and lithium and nickel. But oil prices, having dropped yesterday, were steadier in here today, but certainly not up in a dynamic manner. This continues to look like a completing top formation. Now, when we think about the Nasdaq, it was also in positive territory and coming up off the 12,000 level, so potentially also putting in a higher reaction low. But I remain very much of the view that we're going to have to see these indices push back up into their respective overhead trading ranges, and I think that's going to be rather difficult when we still see so much pressure coming to bear on interest rates and monetary supply. But what we've certainly started to see, though, is that there's more interest coming through in renewable energy. So if we look at some of these hydrogen companies, Plug Power, for example, has rebounded from the region of the 200-day moving average. Iwatani in Japan has got a similar pattern. And then we can think about some of the companies that produce inverters for solar panels, and we've got some clear first steps above the base coming through in some of these companies, or some of the more established companies. And the inverters providers have been among the better performers among the solar sector. It's generally the solar panels tend to be low margin, whereas the inverters tend to have been able to sustain their margins. So SolarEdge Technologies is also firming within this range that's been forming for the last 18 months. Now, when we think about the wider sector, I think there's also domestic issues that are potentially important. So when we think about the UK, they're going to they've got a new administration. So what they're now going to do is become a lot more independently minded when it comes to drilling whatever it is that they have within their own realm. So there's a couple of these very small companies that have been attracting interest. One with the colorful name Union Jack is an onshore late stage provider. So then that's the kind of company that could potentially do well when the UK relaxes some of its drilling rules. Then you also have Angus Energy, and this is an oil and gas sort of development and production company, but it's also an onshore driller. So looked like not much of anything going on, but very clearly popping on the upside as a result of the change of government as well. And then you also have Deltic Energy. But of course, the most important thing is that these are exceptionally small companies. So when we think then about what the outlook is for domestic onshore production in the UK, well, is it going to be enough to tackle the energy independence question? At least when you think about Orcadian Energy, well, they have heavy oil and a reasonably large sized piece of, well, an area in the North Atlantic. So the share has also rebounded over the last 6 weeks and hasn't been out in the wild of the market for very long either. The pound is still under pressure and back in the region of the 115 area. Really quite oversold in the short term. So it's not at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get at least some steadier action in here. But we're going to have to see a really significant rebound in order to break the downward bias overall. If we switch this around and look at the dollar index, then we do have a short-term overbought condition, and we have some evidence of resistance starting to come in. The currency that's been among the weakest against the dollar and has been the yen, and there's no real sign yet that demand is coming back into dominance for the yen. The Brazilian real has been among the strongest currencies around, but it has also weakened somewhat in here over the last couple of weeks. There is still the uncertainty about the election coming up, and it's going to be hard for the currency to rally, I think, until after we find, well, it would have to, of course, be a favorable result. Now let's think a little bit more about these European stock markets. The FTSE 250 is continuing to hold on in the lower side of this range. It's certainly not going up in a dynamic manner, but it's remaining reasonably steady. Then let's look at the larger cap portion of that market. So the FTSE 100 is holding within this range, and that range between 7,000 and 7,500 has been holding really for most of the last 4 years. So this is obviously very dividend oriented. Also, it's very healthcare and energy oriented. So, and then of course there are a spattering of large mining companies as well. So the FTSE 100 is a very defensive index. So it's been holding up better than the majority of European indices. I think it was also particularly noteworthy in here today that Regeneron came through with really quite impressive drug results. And this was for its age-related macular degeneration drug. So the Nasdaq Biotech Index has evolving inverted head and shoulders characteristics. This looks like an evolving base formation, and if it follows through on the upside over the course of the rest of this week and next week. Then there's the clear scope that it's going to go straight back up and test the 5,000 level. And that would just simply be on a measured move type of look. But because the market has been mostly going sideways over the last year, then there's certainly the potential for surprises to occur. And the pace of technological innovation within the biotech sector hasn't been arrested by the volatility in the prices. There are still researchers working away in their labs and coming up with novel solutions to intractable problems. And when we look at the pace of innovation, then there have been bold claims made, but the kinds of claims being made in the biotech sector are a lot closer to reality than some of the claims that are being made in other sectors like renewable energy. So I think that's an important characteristic. I think it's also particularly relevant that we're starting to see a lot more interest now coming through in uranium. So a lot of the alternative energies are doing better. The big question and potential solution seeking of how to become energy independent is being addressed in every country. And this war that is going on in Ukraine and the very clearly painted competition between Russia and its supporter in China and Europe and its supporter of the USA. Well, this is going to be a difficult and increasingly taut environment. And since commodities and particularly energy are now weapons, then countries have to come up with an answer. And there is obviously batteries and lithium and copper are part of the solution, but they're not the only part of the solution. The supply of copper is simply too inelastic to grow at the pace that the renewable energy sector requires. There are going to have to be mix components within it. And that means that there's a place for hydrogen. There's also a place for nuclear. So some of the nuclear processing facilities like Centrus Energy are popping on the upside. And the uranium ETF, which also includes miners, is also firming now from the region of the 200-day and the 1,000-day moving averages. And of course, Russia has a very strong stranglehold on uranium and uranium processing. And they have a great deal of control over what happens in Kazakhstan as well. So that also potentially brings uranium supply into play as well. But uranium can be brought online in other parts of the world. But it's been an awfully long time since we've had a real bull market in that sector. And a lot of the prospective miners went bust during the bear market. So we'll definitely need to see a re-upping of capital moving into that market and more outright support. And I think that that is likely because we have a number of supporting arguments and a number of supporting demographics where we have once only had people that favored renewable, or I guess not renewable, but clean energy and the technology behind it. Now we also have the energy independence argument, and on top of that, we have the ecological argument. So it's not just simply about environmentalism, but it's about preserving other portions of the global ecology and not wallpapering the entire world with solar panels. So I think these are going to be some of the more important factors as we go forward, that there are realizable potential systems in the short term. Then there are the more speculative medium-term or longer-term solutions like small modular reactors, but SMR is also starting to attract interest in here. Now, when obviously we think about where are the challenges, well, one thing that I've often challenged myself to do is to try and identify where the biggest bubbles are in a tightening liquidity environment. Well, Chinese property is probably the biggest bubble in the world, and the stock market continues to go down. And I've been just trying to figure out, well, what will they do? I think they're absolutely aware because they've got plenty of examples that the property sector is completely dependent on access to liquidity. And without it, then prices have to come down. And it sets up a whole domino effect in terms of the multiplier effect for credit, but then also the funding of local governments. And all of that goes away when property prices go down. So China will have to introduce a property tax, and that could crash the market. There's have to be something to either support the market or try and rationalize it. And obviously, this is an enormous problem. So once these types of things roll over, they can move very quickly. And obviously, this is a significant issue. We're in a tighter global economic environment. We're in a tight liquidity environment. And if that continues, an accident is going to happen somewhere. Well, the Fed wants to think that it's not going to be the repo market this time because they've got their standing repo facility. And then we look at what's going on in Europe, and the swap spread is up to where it was in 2008 and 2012. Those were really traumatic events in Europe. And obviously, there's an issue with higher energy prices all over Europe. So that's another choke point. And then, of course, you have what's going on in China, which is obviously another choke point. So there are rising risks out there. And we also see that there are solutions in the works for the energy sector at least. But these are piecemeal in terms of the outlook, whereas there's a much bigger macro picture evolving of tighter liquidity. And that means that, and I think it's in very simple terms. Everybody in the markets likes shooting fish in a barrel. Well, right now there are a lot fewer fish in the barrel, and a lot of those fish are dead. So it's just becoming harder to pick off the easy targets. And this is when we get this message from the market that it's more difficult. Well, it's usually because it is more difficult. And sometimes we just have to listen to the message that the market is giving to us. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.